The 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, start on Friday, and we've been detailing all the American athletes who have local ties all week. Rob Woodfork, who is with me, I'm Noah Frank. We've been sort of previewing the Olympics, but we've got a special guest, a familiar voice here at WTOP, Tim Murray, who is going to be in South Korea. This is your first Olympics, Tim?
It's my first Olympics.
So Tim's going to be covering some hockey, and we'll get into the specifics of that here in a minute. But first of all, how did you even find out about this gig? How did you apply? Did this get offered to you? How did this come down?
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy gig, and as all of us know in this room, and you know, even some people listening, you know, the radio business is just kind of who you know, lucky, right time, right place. So I'll try to make a long story a little bit shortened. So in the fall, I do Navy football on the radio. 1500 AM is one of our affiliates.
He's actually wearing the...
I am wearing Navy gear right now because I only wear free stuff that is handed to me. And a good friend of mine is the television voice of Navy football. He does the games on CBS Sports Network. So I met up with him prior to one of our games, and we were just talking like friends. And he does NFL games on Westwood One. And he said, look, send them your stuff. So in this business, you just send stuff to anybody, and more often than not, nobody responds. Luckily enough, one of their main producers, the gentleman who's actually running the show in Pyeongchang and runs the show for all the Olympics, is a local guy. So a couple emails got exchanged, and I didn't realize how much pressure they were under to fill this spot at that point in time, because they fill these spots way in advance. So it was about September, October when we talked, and we got coffee. And initially, I thought my role, if I were to get anything, because I just sent it just as a, hey, I love Westwood One. They're an amazing company that do play-by-play events. Maybe one day down the road, they would call me up. So part of the Westwood One's package is they offer hockey games. They offer a long-form show on the East Coast and the West Coast, which is 2 hours. And they just wrap up the day that was. The two hosts, Laura Oakman, who does sideline reporting for Fox on the NFL, and then Jason Horowitz will actually be stateside, and he's one of their main studio hosts. And then they do short-form updates 3 times an hour, kind of like what, Rob, you and I do here at WTOP.
Sure. Right.
You know, two-minute updates, what's going on in Pyeongchang. They do those from New York City. So if anything were to happen, I figured that's what I would get, because they do this around the clock. So that's what we kind of talked about. And then as things started to get a little bit closer, I think we got into, you know, early November, that gentleman reached back out to me and said, hey, look, something just opened up. So Mike Francesa, longtime, the king of sports talk radio, retired. And they hired 3 people to fill his spot. And one of them was Maggie Gray from Sports Illustrated. She was going to go to Pyeongchang to do what I do. So she obviously cannot go anymore because she's now on afternoon drive in New York City. You can't allow a brand new show to let one of their hosts leave. So they were looking for someone. Just because I had coffee with this gentleman, they reached out, what's your interest? I have a young son. I talked to my wife and she kind of looked at me, and you know, we've all been there where you say, hey, look at this opportunity. It's a great opportunity. And she knew, and she goes, if this happens, you can't pass it up, can you? I was like, no, I can't. So long story short, that's how it kind of all came about, really pretty rapidly. So yeah, so my main responsibilities will be, I'll be the studio host for all the hockey coverage. So every men's hockey game, Westwood One will carry the entire game. It'll be a 15-minute pregame, intermission, and post. I will do that. And while I'm not doing hockey games, I will be out in the field. So I'm sure we'll get into the specifics of where things are located and all that stuff. And I'm still trying to figure it out myself. But so we do all the men's games. We'll do the United States against Canada women's game, which should be the premier game of the prelims. And then we'll do the gold medal game for the women, which should be United States and Canada as well.
And what's interesting is you'll be covering a couple of local athletes.
Yeah.
We have a local athlete, Haley Scarupa, who will be on the United States women's team. She's from Rockville, Maryland. And also Vienna, Virginia's Garrett Rowe will be on that sort of ragtag team of on the men's hockey team. Any insight into that? I mean, a lot of people have been talking about, hey, this is sort of an assembly of sort of a mishmash assembly of guys. But it feels like the last time we said that, we had the miracle on ice. Do you see any parallels to that?
I mean, obviously, the difference is you do have some professionals on this team. It's really curious, and I think anyone's projection or prediction is a little incorrect, especially with these United States team, and I think Canada to some extent as well. They haven't really played together, and when you had NHL players who had never played together, they could figure it out pretty quickly, and talent kind of trumps all. This is, like you said, Rob, it is a ragtag. You've got four collegiate players. You've got a retired professional, Brian Gionta, who is the captain, who was an Olympian 2006 at the Torino Games. You've got a college coach who's got some Olympic ties. So it really is going to be curious. The Russian team, or the Olympians of Russia, or whatever they're going to call themselves, they are the favorites because the KHL is doing what the NHL normally does. They're shutting down. So some Americans are over in the KHL playing, and they'll be on the United States team. So yeah, it is kind of anyone's guess. I think the two teams that are believed to be the front runners would be Russia and Sweden, because they've actually played a lot together. Nicholas Backstrom clearly won't be on the Sweden team, but there are some guys that have played together. There's some continuity there. And then when it comes to the women, basically it would be a big disappointment if United States and Canada didn't play in the gold medal. Those
right,
two
big
teams,
rivalry.
A huge rivalry. They've played together all the time. The U.S. has actually been beating Canada quite a bit lately, which is exciting. Just a heartbreaking, gut-wrenching loss in 2014. So obviously revenge is on their mind. So that's obviously a huge, exciting storyline when you look at the women's side.
Well, with Russia and Sweden being favorites, that certainly echoes 1980 a little bit on its own. This is a ragtag team. I mean, this is a bunch of guys that maybe we didn't know their names or we don't have that sort of institutional knowledge of, even if you're a big hockey fan. So, I mean, how have you, as far as your own preparation, have you been talking to these guys? You've been going to practices? What's been your involvement to this point?
Yeah, it is. There's not a ton of literature out there on this team. I've been searching for articles, and then, there's articles that have popped up about certain people, a bit of a local tie. He's not from this area, but he's played for the Capitals. Chris Bork is on the team. And this is a pretty cool story, in and of itself, that his father, Ray, was a Canadian Olympian. And he is one of, I think, a couple guys on the team that were offered two-way contracts. And if you have a two-way contract, which means you can go from the minors to the big show, to the NHL, without any real movement, you're not eligible to play. So he, I guess, in talking to his agent, said, this might be my best opportunity to go to the Olympics. And realistically, for Chris Bork, who has been to the NHL before, at best, you're looking at a call-up here or there, four or five games. So he thought it was in his best interest to just play for the Hershey Bears this year and then go over and be an Olympian. So there's a couple guys that have those types of stories. I don't think they've really played much together. There is a United States team that has played in foreign tournaments, but you're talking a number of guys are still playing professionally. A couple guys are still playing college hockey. So, when they get over there, it's just kind of be, let's go. And then when it comes to preparation, for me, a lot of my early preparation was just kind of understanding, because this is the first time I've ever worked for Westwood One as well as a company, and understanding, listening to old broadcasts so I can be in line of what they do strategically on the air, and then we can kind of get into the specifics of the broadcast, because the men's hockey games don't start until the end of the first week. And the first week that I'm in Pyeongchang, so I fly over as this airs, I'm already there. But I'll have about a week of prep time, and there's not a ton going on, and a 14.5-hour flight. And I'll probably do some research there as well. But yeah, bulk of my research are like the 3 weeks leading up.
It's always a tough question to ask, and I'm sure it came up when you were talking to your wife. You mentioned having a young son and all that. So security and the concerns with some of the geopolitical stuff that's going on over there. I was actually doing some reading earlier. The Diplomatic Security Service, they're supposed to have roughly 100 agents, dozens of other personnel on site. They've been prepping for 2 years. And just in my own interviews with some of the local athletes that are going over there, there doesn't seem to be an overwhelming concern about security. They're just kind of trusting the process to borrow the 76ers. Do you have any concerns, or I mean, has it crossed your mind at all?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you talk about going to Korea and being, you know, Pyeongchang's about 80 miles away from the, you know, demilitarized zone. So knowing how close you are to North Korea and everything that happens with tweets going back and forth and, you know, nukes being launched or missiles being launched, yeah, it certainly was on my mind. As time has gone on, and I don't know if this is the right way or wrong way to look at it, I've just said, you know, it's the Olympics. Everybody's going to be there. Knock on wood. I mean, it wouldn't be the wisest decision to try to do something to the Olympics. I know right. that we have, in the past, obviously things have happened. Atlanta, Munich, all those things. Yeah, everything kind of crosses your mind, but as time has worn on, knowing how many people are going to be there, and yeah, the security, like you kind of mentioned, people, this is going to be beefed up. And this is, for South Korea, this is such an opportunity for them to showcase, you know, their country, that they're going to make sure that things aren't going to happen. So at some point, you kind of have to live your life too. And right. You know, South Korea is, from what everyone says, an extremely safe country. So that's the thing too, you kind of look at it that way. So the spotlight's going to be on Pyeongchang, so hopefully everything just kind of goes smoothly. Yeah, that's your initial thought of going to South Korea does freak you out, but as time wore on, I guess I kind of said, I think it'll be all right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
you don't have to necessarily psych yourself into it. It's early like a big opportunity.
Yeah, you look at, you know, sometimes you can psych yourself out. You read too much, but it was nice when you started to hear North Korea and South Korea speaking nicely about each other, and then, you know, obviously, then they start speaking, not necessarily about each other.
Well, and you specifically, we'll see, because the sort of olive branch that's being extended is this hockey team, the women's
right.
hockey team,
mm-hmm.
and the two countries coming together to essentially play together as one, which I know there was some concern from the South Korean side about some of the players who might not get a chance to play anymore. But that sort of will be center stage as far as a symbolic effort, mm-hmm. if nothing else, to be in the spirit of the Olympic Games. I'm just curious. So have the Olympic folks themselves prepped you at all? Has Westwood One prepped you at all? Have there been, like, have you guys had discussions about this? I mean, is there anything? I know you haven't been to the Olympics before, so you have no baseline of, well, we didn't do this in Rio, or mm-hmm. we didn't whatever. But has there been any kind of discussion just about, you know, being prepared for this, or is it just a trip to a foreign country and it's, you're just there to do your job?
Everything that I've been gathering is that this is very similar to previous Olympics. And that being said, the credentials that you have, I mean, as soon as I land in Pyeongchang, or I actually land in Seoul, you check in and you get your credential laminated. And there are certain points where, you know, civilians obviously aren't allowed beyond certain checkpoints. So from what I gather, this is very matter of fact and very business as usual. But business as usual is pretty high security, and you need the right clearance. And, you know, there was a decent amount. We've all been to foreign countries, and there was obviously extra work that I needed to do. I didn't need a work visa or anything like that, but there was certainly extra hoops to jump through. And NBC is actually really the main person that is in charge of everything for us. Westwood One falls under their umbrella, and they're sending far more employees over there. This is a massive event for them. They spend gobs and gobs of money to be the flagship of the Olympics. So they run it to a T. And from what everything that I've done, and that it has been, and look, there was plenty of literature that I read, and it wasn't really a safety concern, but my father was interested in going. He's a world traveler, has actually never been to Korea. So he said, yeah, I'd like to go. And I said, sure, let's make it happen. Pyeongchang is a tiny town. It is a ski resort town. So when he looked it up, he was like, well, how do I get there? And, you know, accommodations. So I'm curious, as you guys have talked to the Olympics, I'm curious where the families are all going to stay. Because for me, I land, I know transportation's provided, my hotel's already taken care of. You know, being in the Olympic or right by the IBC, there are shuttles going everywhere to the mountains and then over to the East Coast where the arenas are. Because the IBC, when you watch the nighttime coverage of Mike Tirico, the IBC is going to be in the mountains in Pyeongchang, about an hour away from the arenas where figure skating and hockey and curling and speed skating, all of those will take place on the East Coast. So I'm very curious about how many people are going to come out to these events, especially in the mountains. You know, on the East Coast, where the arena is, it's more of a city. I'm just curious about how many spectators are going to be at snowboarding, at ski jumping, and at all these events that are massive events for people to watch.
Right. And just in talking to some of the local athletes that are going over there, you know, their parents are going and stuff like that. So it does kind of play to your point. Like,
yeah.
Where are you going to be?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it is, you know, they said, like, depending on the time of day when you land, it might take you 4 hours to get to Pyeongchang. It might take you 2 hours. It's kind of up in the air. So I'm really curious. I mean, I know I'll be extremely exhausted flying 14 and a half hours to Seoul, but I'm curious that drive and what do the roads look like and, you know, all of that. So that's just kind of a small little side note that I'm looking forward to.
Well, I guess that sort of dovetails into, what are you most looking forward to? I mean, obviously the games themselves that you get to cover, but you have that week of prep, which means you have a week to wander and to go check out other events. I mean, is that part of the plan? Are you going to try to get out of the Olympic bubble at all? Are you going to try to, I mean, what's sort of your outlook and what's the thing that maybe is the thing you want to kind of really absorb the most while you're over there?
Well, I think the first week I would love to get to Seoul. I've heard phenomenal things about that as a city, obviously the biggest city in South Korea. So if there's an opportunity, I think that first week when you're not working all day, hopefully I can get over to Seoul. I believe there's a train that goes from Seoul to Pyeongchang to the coast. So that's certainly number one on my list. The second is just to see events that I've never seen before. You know, I mean, look, as excited as I am to be a part of the hockey broadcast, and I'm thrilled, I've seen hockey games before. I've never seen the half pipe in person or ski jumping or the Nordic combined or any of these things, curling, you know, I can't wait to see events that I've never seen before. I love the Summer Olympics. You know, the Winter Olympics, you watch the figure skating and you watch the hockey, but the events that Americans don't normally excel in, I'm very curious to see those, you know, ski jumping and different things like that. So part of me initially was a little bummed out that I wasn't going to be on the coast where all the arena events happened. But the more I thought about it, I'm very excited to be where all the mountain events are happening, because those are events you'll never see, especially, you know, in this area. You know, the summer games with swimming and basketball and softball, I think, is coming back in 2020. And all those sports, for the most part, we've seen track and field. We've never seen these sports before. You know, I've been skiing two times in my life. So I think the events that maybe I don't even have to work, you know, basically we'll be working as much as possible, a ton. But they said, look, if you got 2-3 hours, take a bus to ski jumping or wherever. So I'm looking forward to learning more about these events and getting an opportunity just to soak it all in, because these are things that, you know, we don't talk about. Sports radio does not break down the Winter Olympics. So I'm looking forward to getting an opportunity to see things and learn things about, you know, why was that so rated so high and why this wasn't. So you know, getting a little bit out of your comfort zone sometimes is a great thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing the events that I don't know much about and bundling up, because apparently this is going to be one of the coldest Olympic Games of all time.
The coldest in the last 24 years, at least. Yeah.
Because Sochi, if we all remember, was like 60 degrees. It was great in one aspect for the people covering it, but I think it was terrible for all the, you know, the mountain events. So we'll bundle up.
All right, and we've actually got a local athlete that's going to be in those mountain events, Ashley Caldwell of Ashburn, freestyle skiing. So definitely one to look out for there on
sure
the trip.
Will.
Well, Tim, good luck.
Thank you, guys.
Stay safe, stay warm. And
I'll report back.
Yeah. And
I have one of those old school first down jackets, if you want to borrow that.
I do have a nice big, they did supply us with a big down jacket, which I'm looking forward to, but there's going to be layers underneath
that. Oh, that's
right.
You only wear the free swag
free stuff
that you get.
Only, well, if you're going to give me a free jacket, maybe I'll bring it over.
Well, enjoy the free jacket, and thanks again for joining us, and good luck over there.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.